In the name of one God, Holy Trinity, Amen. Amen. I do have to say from the get-go that I admire a preacher who can relocate to Timbuktu, get his parishioners to drive all night to the middle of nowhere to find him, and then he opens his sermon with, "Y'all are all a bunch of snakes." John the Baptist must have been a pretty remarkable dude and a great preacher in his camel hair coat, chowing down on the wild honey. And as much as I admire the story of John the Baptist and am slowly beginning to resemble him these days, I just can't ignore this gorgeous passage that we have from Isaiah. I would say if there are those of you who are disquieted by my similar appearance to John the Baptist, it appears that my hair and my beard were auctioned off last night at the Mountain Academy gala. So for 10 grand, you're going to have a buzzed and clean-shaven Jimmy Bartz for a period of time. It's all for the kids. It's all for the kids, right? Yeah. The opening of this 11th chapter of Isaiah delivers us this gorgeous image that we should take some time to deconstruct. The prophet opens with, "A shoot shall spring from the stump of Jesse." Most certainly, the prophet is speaking about the Messiah, which is why Christian scholarship attaches this portion of Isaiah as prophecy in regard to Jesus. But we should unpack that image a bit more. The prophet describes a forest, an old one, a strong one, that has been destroyed here. That which was once a mighty forest of strong and tall trees has been devastated. We are to understand, because of the forests, or humanity's unwillingness to live alongside the Creator, the trees, or humanity, are destroyed or dislocated in some way. And out of the stump of Jesse, this one particular tree, a special tree, springs a new shoot. We should know Jesse is King David's father, so there's lineage here. But, and this is critically important to the story, the prophet doesn't say out of the stump of David. He says out of the stump of Jesse. And if we were immersed in Jewish lineage, we would hear the prophet's emphasis on Jesus, indicating that this new leader, this new way, this new shoot will be born of humility rather than all out power. The leaders, the new leaders, are lowly, not royal. And yet they are still connected. Still connected to Israel's line, still connected to God. We can hear that. We know that something new is happening here in the very beginning of the image. And after this new emerging leadership, after the fact, this new emerging leadership is described as humble and lowly. The prophet is sure to emphasize that the leader also is partnered with spirit. This is not a thing of humanity. This is a thing of God and humanity together, the prophet seems to be telling us. And there's this interesting word that shows up here. We hear it translated in our reading as knowledge, or perhaps understanding. This new leader will have a new knowledge or a new understanding, will have a keen insight. But what we miss out here in translation is that the word used here in its original language is connected to our sense of smell. It seems to be telling us that the new leader will be able to sniff out inauthenticity. It's not just a vision here. There's a sniff test as well. We're getting the idea that the kingdom, the capital K kingdom, looks differently than what we're used to, that things will change, though we're not yet in that first sentence quite sure what that change will look like. In the verses following, those middle verses in our reading this morning, the prophet suggests that there is some more disruption on the way. That disruption is characterized specifically as a rebalancing of power. Those who have been without will be provided for. Equity is a characteristic of the capital K kingdom. And then the prophet delivers us this beautiful vision that's been repeated over and over again in the history of Jewish Christian art for thousands of years. The wolf shall live with the lamb, the leopard with the goat, the lion with the calf. The cow will graze alongside the bear, and the lion will be nourished with straw like the ox rather than flesh. And to make the vision even more powerful for Isaiah's audience, the infant will play over the hole of the viper, and the toddler will play in the nest of the snake. What the prophet Isaiah delivers in his vision is a new relational ecology. The kingdom, he's telling us, is different. It's marked by cooperation, by abiding relationship, by interdependence. And he's inviting us to imagine it, to dream about it. It's a beautiful vision. We can picture it in our minds, lambs and wolves cuddled up together. Of course, that's how it's been depicted over the centuries in art, somewhat literally. We see wolves and lambs and leopards and goats and lions and calves, children and snakes. But of course, the prophet's vision is not meant to be taken literally. The prophet, the Spirit, Jesus, do not intend for us to go down to the Lucas Ranch or the Mead Ranch or the Lockhart Ranch or the R-Lazy S or the Triangle X or the Snake River Ranch so that we might bring cattle to graze alongside the wolf, the mountain lion, or the grizz. That's not the point here. It's a vision. We're meant to use our imaginations. And so here we are left with this task to seek deeper understanding of Isaiah's vision. What does it mean for us? Wyoming, winter, 2019, season of Advent, rain in December. We should remember Isaiah is not prophesying to a church here. He's prophesying to a people, a community, a culture, the whole, everyone. What might he be saying to us? I think it's relatively simple after we dissect each beat. He starts, I believe, with, in the face of devastation, hope will emerge. Just when you thought it was over, just over, some hope emerges. That hope will be an abiding one, connected to the Spirit. And it will embody things that we believe are virtuous: equity, peacemaking, righteousness, embodiment of a loving faith rather than a judging one. That's what we hope for. And then that next beat, which is somehow outrageously practically helpful. As hope emerges on the scene, as we hit the threshold of loving change, it might not be smooth from the start. It might be turbulent. We fasten our seat belts. It takes time for that hopeful vision to emerge. And we have time. And then that last beat that our reading ends with the emergence of hope and the uplifting of virtue, after a bit more turbulence we welcome an era of cooperation, mad or somewhat miraculous cooperation. The Democrat will walk arm in arm with the Republican, the South Korean with the North Korean, the evangelical Christian with the fundamentalist Muslim. Each lives with the other cooperatively and harmoniously. The vision that Isaiah brings us, that Advent 2 brings us, is gorgeous and inspiring and aspirational. I don't know if you watch TV this week, but in the light of TV this week, this vision seems amazing. I feel as though it is born of a prescient hope and optimism and positivity in the face of the very opposite. So maybe we ask ourselves, how do we get there? Where do we start? For us, it starts here, right here in a tiny little cow town in western Wyoming, right where we live, adjacent, alongside, inside enormous beauty and somewhat unfathomable resource. It starts in a church that got its start in a log building that is just behind us. It most assuredly starts with the willingness to have our perspectives changed by a vision of something different, something cooperative, something loving something interdependent. If we are powerful, and most of us are, then we may have to surrender some of our power to the powerless. If we are meek, and some of us are, we may have to take up courage to find ourselves befriending the powerful. No more us and them, just us. Just us together, one foot in front of the other, working to cover this valley with love, like snow covers it in the wintertime. That is the work before us, and that is our hopeful expectation. Amen.
Amen.